tweet at TodaySOR.
Social media is playing an increasingly important part in the communication strategies of political election campaigns and is a new battleground for parties eager to increase support. Candidates believe a strong digital campaign can help bridge the slimmest of margins when votes are counted. It's also a vital tool for journalists, of course, in assessing public opinion and examining engagement on policy issues. So what's the role that mainstream media will play in the forthcoming election? How will parties seek to target you on your social media platforms? For more, I am joined by Philip Ryan, Deputy Political Editor with Independent News and Media, by Susan Daly, Managing Editor with Journal Media Limited, and our own Niamh Lyons. Susan, this being a Saturday election, clearly parties hope there'll be a bigger turnout of students than ever before. How will they go about in particular targeting students who, as we know, tend not to be watching television or reading newspapers?
That's right. They tend not to be as engaged with what we kind of think of as the mainstream media. So there's also a presumption that they're very engaged on the social media platforms that the political parties are very comfortable with. So your Facebooks, which allows you to micro-target people, which would be very useful if you were trying to get people of a certain age, demographic, location, who you can even put in what kind of interests you'd like to target those people on, say if they'd been clicking pages about the climate or homelessness and the other issues that you think maybe a younger vote might be more interested in. But the reality is that quite a lot of that younger generation, the sort of first-time voters, they're not necessarily on Facebook. They're not necessarily listening to us people on Twitter with followings. You know, they are on, you know, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok. They're also using them in a kind of a dark way. So they're messaging within groups. I think it's going to be very difficult for the parties to target that. And if I think about even, you know, the evolution of the last, including this election, the last three elections, in 2011, the most advanced we got was, if anyone remembers, Fine Gael's election e-cards, Valentine e-cards before the election, where you could send one to your loved one with political message such as it's the economy, Cupid, you know, oh my God. Anyway, that went down really well. By 2016, we were talking about Facebook targeting and there would have been money spent in it by that time. Now we're in a different situation in 2020. Twitter have banned political advertising. So if we're talking about the wider demographic as well, there is more transparency on Facebook. You can go into their ad library and see exactly what political parties in Ireland are adding. I went in last night. Actually, there hasn't been a lot of activity so far. So I think that they're going to spend their money more in subtle ways around sort of media training. I think they should apply that more to how they use social media as well, because it's the not paid for stuff that's actually getting around, isn't it?
Philip, we don't do, at least up to now, I haven't done a whole lot of it by way of political attack ads here, but some of the campaign videos, they do have something of an edge to them, though, don't they?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. There doesn't seem to be the platform to do it here. The television stations don't really take that type of course, RT doesn't. So the Fine Gael have been big in it to start with. You saw it recently. They've been doing this thing with Reckless Fianna Fáil, have a hashtag to go with it, a little video. They had a video ready to go when we had a story in the Sunday Independent about Lisa Chambers and her voting. They seem to want to push it out on Twitter. But like Susan's saying, you'd wonder what influence it really has, because the people on Twitter are generally, it's a microcosm of people who work in the media, politics and the surroundings. So those type of things, they aren't really hitting the voters, and especially the young voters who, like people, friends and family of my age who are in their mid to late 30s, they would have been initially on Facebook, but now they don't use it at all. They've moved on or raising their families. They don't care. They're certainly not on Twitter if they're not working in the media or in politics. I don't think they're on Instagram. So I'd wonder really the impact that social media has at all on Irish politics, because there is the main set of voters out there, and Ireland's a small country, that they'd like to be asked for their vote. And most TDs will tell you that, even the TDs that live in constituencies where they feel that they have their strong, loyal voters, they know that they have to go out and knock on those doors still and say, look, it's election time again.
Well, as one of your predecessors with whom I worked many years ago, Chris Lennon, used to put it, if a vote is worth having, it's worth asking for face to face. Niamh Lyons, the government had approved new draft legislation to regulate paid political advertising online. That's now fallen with the 32nd Dáil. So what is the situation as it stands?
Yeah, this was a bill that they actually initially rejected, a piece of private members' legislation brought forward initially by James Lawless TD. And I suppose it's because the Irish Electoral Acts were kind of set out the campaign rules in 1992, when we obviously didn't have internet and we certainly didn't have social media. So it was as if we had this sort of wild west of campaigning and no real way to regulate it. Online advertising at the moment is not subject to direct regulation, so there's obviously an absence of transparency there. Also a huge issue around the likes of bots, which are basically social media programs or sort of profiles that are programmed to automatically generate messages and content online. That bill provides for the disclosure of information in online political advertising. So essentially the public would be informed of who is spending money and on what. But as Susan just said, anybody now can access that information in their Facebook library. Now, at the time, Dennis Nocton said that the reason they were rejecting this legislation because it actually gave the minister too much power. So the minister would then be sort of in control or would have his finger over the button to, you know, with the stroke of a pen and the cusp of an election, decide what type of political advertising would be allowed or allowable. But a lot is still being left up to the social media companies, and that's seen as a problem.
I suppose we're back to the idea, and it's not a new one, and it was, I think, meant to be brought forward, the idea of an electoral commission to run all of this stuff, including, Philip, you know, the electoral register. Again, that was in the news at the day the election was called.
Yeah, well, there's huge plans that we keep hearing about year on year about how we're going to fix this electoral register and make it more for the 21st century, but it just doesn't happen. Like, the idea that we still have to go down to post office or guard stations and get form signed to vote just seems a little bit archaic at this stage. And whatever will happen in the future, it's hard to know. Just one of the things on that act as well, I thought one of the pieces, like a lot of it, like you were saying, has been done and is being done by the social media companies, and we are putting probably too much trust in them to do it. But I think one of the other side of it was to make it illegal for people to operate hundreds and thousands of accounts and click farms. So you can't have these kind of bots out there trying to influence debates and you know, piling on people when they tweet things. And like a lot of the stuff, and even most of the political parties would do this and have this happening, is that they'd have WhatsApp groups to talk to each other. And if they want someone to be targeted or some tweet or some message put out there,
messages are sent. Yeah, we had a little example of it, I think, on this programme on Monday when Micheál Martin
certainly
was on. Simon Harris put out a tweet saying, who's this new politician agent of change on Today SOR? Oh, he's not new. He was in the cabinet that left the country bust. He was the Minister for Foreign Affairs who lost the European Union referendum and the Minister for Health who set up the HSE. And also he throws in a TD since the Haughey era. There was further stuff as well. So I suppose it's not new that you would have people out there even before the days of social media
being heckled and you don't even know it.
Or at least, you know, sort of sending in calls or messages to radio shows.
I think the difference with social media, and this is where there could be an impact, and it's exactly what you've put your finger on there. It's not necessarily paid for. It is, and it's not a bot thing. It is the very human thing of having your tribes ready to go. We see Sinn Féin are actually very active to the point that, you know, they've been, some of their followers were called Shinnerbots, you know, which is a kind of a play on that. The idea that if there's any criticism of one of their candidates that everybody hops in and kind of defends them.
Or attacks the critic.
But what's interesting is all of that interaction on WhatsApp groups, for example, often groups that are not set up with a political intention. So you have a lot more trust in the information that goes around in these more personalised groups. It could be a local residence group on Facebook or whatever. And they're harder to target. They're harder to get into. A more sophisticated political machine would be looking at that for the next election. How do we make ourselves important in these smaller groups where the voice carries more weight? But it's those debates and conversations that amplify it. But the Conservatives did a thing in the last election, the most recent election, where they did actually use social media, but they used it, the advertising, in a more broadcasting approach. So the Tories actually didn't spend a lot of money on Facebook at all. The Lib Dems spent more money on Facebook than the Conservatives. We saw how that turned out. What the Conservatives did was they bought a lot of banner ads on the homepage of YouTube and of the newspaper homepages. So there was a point at which everyone in Britain who accessed YouTube saw the Conservative
ahead. Any signs of that happening here, or is it just a little early in the campaign, Philip?
For political advertising on the websites, well, I don't know we've had any thus far. I always look forward to the posters they actually put into the papers. Some of them are last year we had the last campaign, the marriage between Fianna Fáil and the Socialist Party and all that. That was
one of the things in the British election that feeds into what Susan was just saying, that became a real issue, was how to debunk the kind of rhetoric from politicians. And that could be an issue here, because a lot of micro-targeting happened when Boris Johnson said something about 40 new hospitals would be built. That was immediately debunked. And actually, Matt Hancock, the health secretary himself, said funding is only in place for 6 of these hospitals. But when you went on to Facebook groups and sort of chats and social media sites like that, people were directly targeted based on their age, mostly women, mostly aged from 35 to 55. And they were then given the message that, no, that's been debunked. Boris Johnson is actually right. So then they kind of propelled the message forward, even though it was incorrect.
It raises the question, Susan, about the importance of fact-checking during this campaign. We're not in the realm of Kellyanne Conway's alternative facts, but oftentimes politicians will shape the truth in order to deflect from an awkward question.
I really wasn't expecting this for this election. No, I mean, I'm clearly joking, because in the 2016 general election, I set up the Journal's Fact Check project precisely because of the political manifestos, policies coming in. And I was like, I've been through many general elections now. I'm pretty tired. We're not publishing these. We're not publishing them as they are. So what we're going to do, we're going to fact check them. So we got advice from the International Fact Checking Network, and we're a member of them now. We have guidelines around it. And we have kept up that project since, because the public and our readers really liked it. We do that on our site. We have good distribution. We have good social media presence. We, though, cannot use those fact checks. We can put them on Facebook, but we can't apply them, even though we're a verified partner of theirs in fact checking. We can't apply those fact checks to direct political speech on Facebook. If you remember Mark Zuckerberg's disastrous outing in front of the US, last year, where he was trying to defend this, and he was saying, well, it's free speech. The point is that it doesn't really serve them to clamp down on it, because they get a lot of revenue from all advertising, and they also don't want to be seen to be interfering, so to speak, because they have that much power. So it's on one hand saying we have no power, on the other hand, the reason they can't
just
interfere.
See a text in from Dave in Loughrea. Every day I log on to Facebook, I get an advert from Leo Varadkar telling me what he has done during his term. Big money being spent, not getting any other messages from any other candidates.
There you go. I mean, I think sometimes you know, the kind of clout of the higher spending parties can actually bother people. They're maybe a bit too in your face. A lot of what works online now, believe it or not, are the low-fi kind of messages. I mean, we saw Willie O'Dea doing one last night where he was kind of debunking this idea that Brexit was coming up in the doors. He literally just has a camera in his face, full on, and he's saying, I've just knocked on, or we have, my team has canvassed 1,000 doors in Limerick tonight. Brexit hasn't come up once.
A different message from
Neil Richmond of Fine Gael, who was saying it came up on 60% of the doors. So obviously
600 doors.
Yeah, but for instance, we had Regina Doherty, the Minister of Social Protection, on the programme here a few days ago, saying no one reads manifestos. Now, if that is the case, and you know, she wouldn't be the only one in any political party to suggest as much. Well, how do the parties get their message out then on policy?
Well, you have to pick.
Albert Reynolds famously told me, we put it on a matchbox.
Yeah. Well, this is it. They'll need 3 or 4 core policies, something you'll remember when you go into the
get Brexit done.
Something like that, which seems to be their only policy at the moment. But I'm sure, yeah, Ratker always has a few tricks up his sleeve. I'm sure there'll be some big policy announcement in the manifesto, which will cause debate. You'd fairly hope for the Fine Gael members that there is. Micheál Martin, similarly, there will be something, some policy initiative that will catch the attention.
Like
Sinn Féin are
kind of
pushing quite a significant which people haven't pushed. I think they're announcing it more today, is this idea of reducing the retirement age to 65, which would be a significant shift in public policy.
You mean the pension age?
The pension age, to 65, which would be a very significant move
I think we'll see a lot of the manifesto stuff coming out in these little punchy bite-sized pieces with like videos, with music beds. And the way it was done in Britain was interesting. a lot of the time the word manifesto wasn't even used because that was seen as kind of being too linked to policy. So Jeremy Corbyn, for instance, did a sort of a back of a black cab thing where he, in 60 seconds, had to ream off as many of his own policies as he could remember. Mm. Boris Johnson followed that up with a similar video saying, well, here's our top seven policies. So again, really trying to feed into this idea that people have a minimal attention span.
If they say, for instance, that Twitter won't allow political ads, at the same time you get somebody like Vicky Phelan tweeting her support for Alan Kelly, the Labour TD and party health spokesperson. Now, that's if
you
like getting her.
John Delaney supported him, I think, did he?
Well,
well, that's very, well, John Delaney and Alan Kelly are both from Tipperary, so I'm from Tipperary, I'm endorsing no one, that's all I can tell you. But it does show that there is some weight. We'll say, for example, Twitter, right, and we don't have a huge proportion of the population on it. What we do have, though, is influencers who get a chance, and I'm talking about political and social media influencers, to repeat tweets like we're doing here on a more, on a wider reaching platform. And so what you're looking at is what takes off there. And what takes off there, which we saw with previous referendums, is actually to do with issues and personal stories. So if politicians can tap into that, then they'll be doing well. People do ignore the rather larger, you know, campaign pieces because you're also sending those to people who follow you. The people who follow you are people who are probably already going to vote for you. So you're not exactly converting votes at that point.
But talking about something new that took off or that takes off yesterday, for instance, all over social media, the picture of Owen Murphy's election poster high above the bridge along Grand Canal in Dublin where the homeless man was injured. Now, the government took time in catching up with that, but it was building all through the morning on social media.
All through the morning, it was fascinating that really, even though Fine Gael didn't have their press conference until around, it ended up being, I think by the time the doorstep happened, around noon, all morning people were just outraged by what they were hearing. A lot of people were also a bit disturbed about the fact that the Taoiseach was in a sort of an industrial plant and that industrial machinery had been used. So they were even linking that element to it, which is kind of, you know, it's a coincidence, but it's something that a lot of people were remarking upon. And then Owen Murphy's tweet saying he was saddened about the incident. He's demanded a full report and that he's taken the poster down. Even that angered people. The idea that people were thinking, well, what was it doing there in the first place? Did it go up while this incident was taking place?
And I suppose, as looking ahead a little bit to maybe the week after next, the big TV debates, multi-party debates, head-to-head debates, again, they'll have their troops with their fingers
That's when you'll definitely see these orchestrated campaigns, the WhatsApp groups who are influencing the Twitter and Facebook content being put out by the parties, the comments on various things. I presume they'll be fact-checking each other, if you can really call one party fact-checking another party actual fact-checking. I don't think so. I'm sure all the other media outlets will be similarly doing so. But whether that does Twitter debates, the thing with Twitter is that it influences all of us. Like that's how it works.
I mean, it was important. Did you get the jump on the election date, Philip?
Yeah, we had
February the 8th.
Yeah, that's we heard from the cabinet at one stage. We decided to put it out there. All right, we were right.
And that's important. You know, retaining your own prominence.
Well, of course, the last time around, 2016, that was how Enda Kenny announced the date of the election. He put it out himself on Twitter.
Yeah,
we just did it for them this time.
Okay, well, look, no doubt we'll be keeping a close eye on social media and all other forms of media between now and the 8th of February. My thanks to the three of you, Philip Ryan, Deputy Political Editor with Independent News and Media, Susan Daly, Managing Editor of The Journal, and Niamh Lyons of RTE News and Current Affairs. Thank you all.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.